Lyft is racing to be the first ride-hailing app to sell shares on the U.S. stock market. And on Monday, it takes its pitch on the road to investors in hopes of raising as much as $2 billion. Looming over Lyft's initial public offering, larger rival Uber's planned IPO a month later.
Pre-K education is the latest industry that tech companies are going gaga for. There is now a flood of software makers bringing daycares into the modern age. It's a huge market, with over 740,000 daycares in the U.S. bringing in more than $48 billion in revenue every year.
If the point of tariffs was to help restore the balance of trade between China and the U.S., well, so far it's had the opposite effect. Imports have surged. Exports have plunged. Take a look at this. They're down 25% last year across the country, exports to China. It's even worse as of January. You can see the acute impact out west. The Institute of International Finance estimates U.S. companies are losing $40 billion in a year because of the Chinese tariffs. Now, the ports are doing fine because ships are still coming in filled with Chinese cargo. Some companies have continued to front load ahead of potentially even more tariffs, but it's gumming up the system. There is only a 1% vacancy rate here for containers.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's March 18th. It's 5:09 in the morning. Here we are with another edition of The Opening Bell and another business week and business day getting underway. Thank you for tuning in today. We're happy you're here with us. We've put together a really good broadcast for you to start off the week as well. First up this morning, Dr. Teresa Woodruff will be here from Northwestern University. A new report says women scientists get less funding than men. And we will talk to Dr. Woodruff about why that is and what the new research shows. A little bit later in the program, Christine Chang will be here. Tax day is almost here, and an organization in Chicago called Ladder Up is helping low-income and financially challenged members of the community get those taxes done and get a leg up on their finances. We'll talk with Christine coming up at 5:40, about 5:40 this morning here on The Opening Bell. And, of course, we'll keep you posted on the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports as we move forward this morning. Now on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a mixed open on Wall Street a little bit later this morning. Dow futures are off nearly 50 points, nearly a quarter of a percent this morning. S&P and NASDAQ futures are just a fraction higher. In Europe, markets are generally in the green. In London, up by nearly three quarters of a percent. In Germany, up just a fraction. In France, up just a fraction as well. As we look around the rest of the globe, in Asia this morning, markets are generally in the green as well. The Nikkei is going to end the day up nearly a half a percent, 133 points. The Hang Seng up 396 points, nearly a percent and three quarters. The Shanghai up nearly 2.5% this morning. And oil is trading at $58.25 a barrel in the U.S., which is down about 27 cents. Some business headlines as we get going this morning. The acting White House chief of staff says it could be a while before lawmakers have a list of military construction projects impacted by President Trump's emergency declaration to move funding for a wall along the southern border forward. Yesterday, Mick Mulvaney says he's not aware of any existing list that describes projects that are absolutely not going to be funded so the wall can be funded. He said if anybody knows, should know, it is him, because he also heads the Office of Management and Budget, but he could not say which programs will be impacted. It is likely, too, that there will be a lawsuit now moving forward over the emergency declaration. There's already at least one, and this is going to probably end up in the Supreme Court. Ride-sharing service Lyft is hitting the road today in an effort to convince investors to spend heavily on an upcoming IPO. The company is looking to raise up to $2 billion in meetings with investors and hopes to see the company valued at more than $20 billion at its launch at the end of next month. Lyft doesn't want investors to wait for rival Uber, which is expected to launch its own IPO next month, sometime this year, as a matter of fact, as well. The latest in the Boeing investigation, the U.S. Department of Transportation is investigating whether there were lapses in the Federal Aviation Administration's approval of Boeing planes involved in two recent fatal crashes. That's according to the Wall Street Journal reporting on Sunday. The DOT probe launched after a new Boeing 737 MAX 8 operated by Indonesia's Lion Air crashed into the Java Sea in October last year. According to the Journal, which cited people familiar with the inquiry, none of the 189 people on board survived. Earlier this month, on March 10th, the second Boeing 737 MAX crashed shortly after takeoff. It was an Ethiopian Airlines plane, killing all 157 people on board. Wall Street Journal says in an update to the article that a grand jury in Washington issued a broad subpoena one day after the Ethiopian Airlines crash to at least one person involved in the development of the Boeing 737 MAX. And a newspaper in Seattle yesterday reported that there may have been a too cozy relationship between the FAA and Boeing, that the FAA may have not looked and done its own checking on safety materials that Boeing presented on the 737 MAX aircraft. Let's begin front and center this morning. Science funding for women scientists, apparently less than men, according to new research. First-time women principal investigators get at least $41,000 less than men on average. Joining us to talk about this morning is Dr. Teresa Woodruff, Associate Provost for Graduate Education at Northwestern University. Dr. Woodruff, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning. Thank you.
This is an important finding about women scientists getting less federal funding than men. We report regularly here on the inequality in all kinds of different areas, but this is one that we hadn't heard of. Talk to us a little bit about the headline of this finding.
Well, it turns out that women who are applying for funding from the National Institutes of Health, the largest biomedical funding source in the nation, are disadvantaged from the start of their careers based on the differences in the amount of money that we can acquire for grants that are submitted versus men. And it is somewhat surprising that this difference exists, but it turns out that this goes back to even a report from the RAND Corporation in 2002 that there was gender bias in the federal funding from the NIH. So while I'm a little surprised myself, it turns out that there has been inequality for some time in the way we're funding the newest biomedical discoveries.
And you referred to it there just bluntly as gender bias. That's what's going on here?
Well, you know, the data that we have is silent on the why, but it is the case that there are differences in the amount of funding that a female versus a male will acquire for a grant. And the way we controlled for some of the differences that might exist because women might get more funding from one institution versus another is that we actually looked at first-time investigators at the same institution. So at Harvard, at Cornell, at Northwestern, at University of Michigan. And so you would assume that a male and a female first-time awardee going into these institutions would be, on average, more similar to each other. And we still found the bias existed between a male and a female at Harvard and, in fact, a male and a female at Northwestern. And so we think that that suggests that there is something at a macro level that is really changing the equation for females versus males.
The study analyzed nearly 54,000 grants, and that's across a number of different areas. And men and women in the study had equal backgrounds in applying for these grants. Talk to us about the, I guess it's $41,000 less women get than men on average. Talk to us about the significance of what that money pays for.
Right, so that means that from the very start of one's careers, women have less dollars to invest in equipment or in technical support staff or in just that high-risk, high-gain kind of science that's going to be the meaningful new result that ultimately changes all of our lives. And so it really is a gap from the very beginning, and that magnifies over time in ways that are not just in terms of the absolute amounts of money that go into a lab, but in the loss of those women from the biomedical pipeline. We know we have a leaky pipeline for women as they traverse from the earliest stages of the academy through tenure and beyond. And so this may be one of those things, an economic precarity that we really did not understand before that actually could be solved. And now we would have the brightest minds of all of us staying within the scientific disciplines.
Yeah, and because if you have potentially women ending their career because of a grant inequality early on, what does that mean to a loss in, let's say, a field like yours, which is obstetrics and gynecology? Talk to us about the loss of a potential breakthrough, perhaps.
Yeah, it simply means that the promise of basic science and medicine, that equation is being blunted by the fact that we don't have all the brightest minds tackling all the different problems that are most important to us. We also published last month that, in fact, as we go to more sex-inclusive science and medicine, where we consider sex as a biological variable and change the equation from the male-dominated cells and animals that are part of the current biomedical pipeline, when we look at the attitudes of all of us, all scientists on that new inclusion policy, women disproportionately say that's a good policy, something we should do. Males, significantly fewer males, say that that's important. So that means that as we lose more women, we're going to lose many of those kinds of studies that require us to look at sex as a biological variable, many of those diseases that affect women more than men, or in fact men more than women. And so that represents a precarity to all of us and our future health.
Well, here's the million-dollar question. How can we change this scenario? How can we change this practice?
Well, there are three things we're really looking at. Again, the data were silent on the why. One of the whys could be that women are asking for less money. We suspect that's not the case because there'd be no incentive to ask for anything less, but we'll be looking at data to try and understand if there is a difference in what is being asked for. The second thing is if women actually do get, and we know that they get less in terms of their startup for their labs than men, it could be that at the level of the federal agency, that they look at the dossier, the background for the women, and say, well, they don't have enough investment in their laboratory. They don't have a big enough space to be able to do this work, so we'll cut that grant by some proportional amount. So that could be a certain part of this. There could be simply institutional things within different universities that lend themselves towards women not being able to even apply for some of these grants. And then, of course, there could be a simple bias within, and I think it would be unconscious, within the federal funders, the program officers that look at those grant outcomes and then assign a dollar amount. And, you know, the percent that is awarded is entirely up to those program officers. And so we'll try to look a little bit at the grants themselves, at whether or not the scores were identical and how that was ultimately played out in terms of funding decisions. It'll take a little while to pull this data together, but we think it's an important next step for this study.
And my second thought would be that there probably is a policy or a law that might be implemented, but something tells me there are probably those laws already on the books about inequality and bias.
Right. I think you're not allowed to discriminate in the United States. And so I think if someone is doing so, it's not that there is an overt, it's not overt, it's an unconscious bias. And so I think as we continue to shine data-driven spotlights on these kinds of differences, it will inevitably drive better behavior, and that better behavior will allow us to have more diversity in the minds that are doing the kind of science that is across the breadth and width of the biology that ultimately will improve our health in the long run. And I think that's the equation that we want to try and drive.
It also seems like this might be a good place for a hashtag movement, a Time's Up movement, perhaps, for science, women scientists and funding. Is it something that we in the general public can get involved with and lobby for?
Well, I don't have a hashtag, but I think anytime we understand that there are biases that are not improving our health, that we can all get involved and ask how science in your state, ask how the scientists who are at your local universities are being funded. And if each university that has a difference between males and females would simply say, well, until we sort out the why, we're going to simply top off grants so that there is no inequality, we can solve this problem very quickly and then move to trying to understand root cause in the long run.
Dr. Woodruff, good of you to be with us this morning. We appreciate you sharing this with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Teresa Woodruff, the Associate Provost for Graduate Education at Northwestern University and also the Thomas J. Watkins Professor of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine and Director of the Women's Health Research Institute.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. A Chicago organization that provides free resources to financially vulnerable families is right in the thick of this year's tax season. Ladder Up and hundreds of volunteers are providing free tax services to families. We're happy to have with us this morning the group's executive director, Christine Cheng, with us to talk a little bit more about this. Christine, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
I mentioned you're right in the thick of it. I mean, tax season is right around the corner, and I'm guessing you've had a very busy season helping folks.
We have. So for us, our tax season starts usually in late January. That's when we first open our doors at our 28 tax sites. And then, of course, we offer service right up to the mid-April filing deadline. And even after that, when you think the season is over, we actually continue to provide off-season tax support as well.
Talk to us about why your organization is doing what it's doing and why it's so important.
Right. So the mission of our organization is to help low-income families and individuals access the financial resources they need to move up the economic ladder. So this time of season, we're talking about tax returns as a way to access really critical tax refunds that families are then using to meet basic needs, pay for, current expenses, as well as save for the future. So for us, the mission is not to do taxes, but it's really viewing taxes as a way for families to access those financial resources.
And that way generally is because of different tax credits or other things in the tax code that people may be overlooking that could help them.
Absolutely. So, you mentioned that we have hundreds of volunteers. That's correct. We provide them with training. They pass an IRS certification test. And then we're using electronic software to ensure that we're preparing the most accurate returns for our families. And we're doing this free of charge because a lot of our families are, as you mentioned, financially vulnerable. And we don't think that they should be paying for a service through a commercial provider that our volunteers can provide for free.
Yeah, and you actually have 1,400 volunteers, at least 1,400. So it's quite a big group of people that are helping out. What are some of the biggest things that people miss on their taxes that could help them with a bigger refund?
I mean, certainly a lot of our families that we're talking about in our income target range are eligible for the Earned Income Tax Credit, which is, the largest poverty alleviation program in our country. Been around for 40 plus years, received bipartisan support. It's a credit that's designed to reward work. And so that's a huge credit. I think about 40% of our families are receiving that. And that credit alone can equal more than $6,300 on a return. So that's a huge one. The child tax credit is another one that a lot of people are qualified for. Tax reform actually made the size of that credit larger for 2018, tax year 2018. So that's another critical one as well.
And most people, I guess, more than half of taxpayers who claim that tax credit, the earned income tax credit, when they go through a tax preparer and try to not do this themselves, it costs them, doesn't it? What is the average cost per return?
Right. So we have clients who come in not infrequently who say, I'm so grateful that you did this for me for free. I ended up paying XYZ preparer $200, $250, $300. So you hear it range from $150 to above $300. Some of the commercial firms will charge by the number of forms or schedules used. And so when you claim additional credits, that's, of course, additional schedules or forms that are being completed as part of your 1040. And so you will see an increase. Oftentimes, you will see an increased charge for a family who has that kind of tax situation because they've activated additional forms.
Christine, this is the new tax year with the new tax code. How are things different this year? What are your folks telling you about what they're seeing?
There was a lot of talk about this over the summer, of course, the fall, and then leading into the winter about tax reform and how this might affect your personal return as an individual. What we've seen is that it can go up, it can go down in terms of how reform will affect your refund total. It is very, very case by case. You know, that some of the bigger things that happened with tax reform is the personal exemptions went away. So it used to be the case that you could subtract a certain amount per person that you're claiming on your return. That's now not a thing. However, the standard deduction has essentially doubled for all of the filing statuses. So, you know, that's something that can affect some taxpayers a certain kind of way and others a different sort of way. I mentioned earlier that the child tax credit is now larger. It used to be $1,000. It's now $2,000 with a max of $1,400 that's refundable. So, you know, there are various changes that can move it up or down in terms of people's refunds. But really, it's a case-by-case basis. Tax situations, you know, can vary quite a bit.
Right. And that's interesting to hear. And without getting into the political nature of that part of the conversation, for the financially challenged people that your organization works with, were the tax changes worthy? Were they helpful or not?
You know, it's a little bit preliminary for us to have done the full data analysis at this point since we're midway through the season. But preliminarily, it looks like more than half of our clients are seeing a refund that is higher than what they received last year. Again, it's not independent of other situations changing in their life. If it was, you know, children aging out of credits or new children being born or job changes or additional income, less income, whatever the case may be. You know, the other thing to note, too, and this is noted in some of the articles you'll see about tax reform, is the withholdings change. You know, the tax brackets were changed last year. A lot of people are taxed at a slightly lower rate this year or were in 2018. The employer withholdings tables were changed. So some people did notice a little bit extra money each paycheck starting at a certain portion of time in 2018, and that may actually lead to them having a slightly smaller refund come tax time, but that's just due to less over withholding, if that makes sense. So some people, again, saw a little bit extra in their paycheck week to week or month to month versus seeing a larger refund at tax time.
Yeah, and then the flip side of that, I've heard from a number of different people who did not change their withholding, and they're concerned that they haven't even started their taxes yet. They're concerned they may actually have to pay something this year.
Right, and that is something that the IRS is sensitive to, that there may be additional people who have never owed before who do owe this year. Certainly online options are good to look at the IRS.gov website in terms of different ways that you can pay. And, you know, withholdings is another thing. The IRS on their website have a withholding calculator that you can use to really ascertain what should you put down on your Form W-4 to give to your HR department at work in terms of how many allowances, how much should I be withholding to avoid being in a situation where you now owe come tax time.
We also heard about the government shutdown for 5 weeks. What impact are you seeing on taxes and the work you're doing because of that?
You know, we haven't seen any issues system-wide in terms of just processing and that kind of thing. I think what we were hearing from our local IRS contacts is, you know, from a customer service standpoint, they are slammed with requests that came in by mail, for instance, during that 5 week shutdown. And I think they're still trying to kind of process some of those items. I've heard that wait times may be a bit longer on the phone. Again, I think that the IRS.gov website is good for getting some of those resources without having to jump on a phone call and be on hold. So thankfully, we at least haven't noticed in our kind of segment of the tax market a lot of huge impacts for our taxpayers.
Christine, the organization has been around since 1994. You recently merged with the Center for Economic Progress. Talk about the impact that you're making just overall. Do you feel like you're helping these financially vulnerable families get up on that ladder further?
Absolutely. So, you know, with the coming together of our two organizations, we now operate 28 tax sites across the Illinois area. Most of them are in Metro Chicago, but we do have kind of a downstate presence in Springfield as well. You know, I think it's just been a tremendous opportunity for us to join forces to bring our strengths together and to deliver service to that many more people. So, you know, between our two organizations over the last 25 plus years that we've been around in Chicago, jointly we've returned more than $1 billion in economic impact for our families.
The issue of financial inequality in our country seems to be getting worse, is getting worse. What more needs to be done besides having organizations like yours help?
I mean, I think there's a lot that you could do here in terms of, you know, tax policy and equitability between, you know, who's being taxed and that kind of thing. I think for the everyday person who might be listening to this, it's getting involved in some way, and volunteering is one of those things. You know, we can't each change policy with every decision we make, but we can contribute what we can contribute, and a lot of our volunteers are doing this because they want to give back. But beyond that, they want to do it in a skills-based way. They want to leverage their financial skills and their willingness to help and have that translated to, you know, very tangible rewards for the client who's coming in to see them.
Christine, how can people get in touch with the Ladder Up if they need assistance this tax season or other financial help?
Absolutely. I would say call our hotline, which is 312-409-1555. Additionally, information is available on our website, which is goladderup.org, which will also link over to economicprogress.org for a full listing of all of the tax site locations.
Well, we appreciate you being with us today. Good luck for the rest of the tax season here.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Christine Chang, Executive Director of Ladder Up in Chicago. Again, that phone number is 312-409-1555, and you can find them online at goladderup.org.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a mixed open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures down 82 points, down nearly a third. S&P and NASDAQ futures are up just a fraction. Some developing news this morning just into WGN from the Netherlands, where police in the central Dutch city of Utrecht say that multiple people have been injured as the result of a shooting on a tram in a residential neighborhood. Police say that trauma ambulances and police have been sent to the scene. No other details on that available, but we'll be watching this very closely from the WGN newsroom as we move forward here this morning. Now, agriculture and commodities with Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As far as I'm concerned, the big agricultural story this week will be the weather. Listen to this. Rains that melted a historic snowpack swamped the central plain states with record floods yesterday, breaching river levees and causing two deaths. And with water levels expected to rise through the week, evacuations are underway in communities along portions of the Missouri River on the Nebraska and Iowa border, as well as the Nebraska on the Elkhorn River and Platte River. Meteorologists said the big ones are at record stages right now. There have been some heavy levee breaks, so there are towns that are flooded. And yesterday I received an email from a cattleman in Nebraska showing me pictures of using the front end loader on his tractor to lift calves and cattle out of the mud that they could not get out of by themselves. Tragic picture, and a lot of animals losing their lives in the rains that fell last week. The big market news last week, and will it continue? The limit up move on lean hog contracts on Friday, up the $3 daily limit through the months of August. And that was because of the declining number of hogs in China because of African swine fever. Compared to February a year ago, China's pig herd slid 16.5%, so it'll be watched very carefully today in trade at the Mercantile Exchange. Well, I hope you're above water. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Before we leave you, just a couple more stories as we go forward here. Virginia officials voting to approve an incentives plan for Amazon's second headquarter near Washington, D.C., after a board meeting, a five-member panel of the Arlington County Board voted unanimously to approve a $23 million tax plan incentive plan for Amazon's second headquarters to be built in Crystal City. The online retailer has also been offered a $750 million package by the state of Virginia. The board's decision met with heavy opposition from the public who attended the meeting. There were outbursts of anguish that punctuated much of the meeting. Board members highlighted the economic prosperity Amazon will bring to the region, while people who gave opposing testimony cited concerns, cost concerns for taxpayers, and overcrowding in the region. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Monday, March the 18th. The housing market index for March is due today. Housing industry analysts expect that the index by the National Association of Home Builders to build for February will build on February's four-month high. The housing numbers expected at midday today. Also on our calendar as we look ahead to Monday, Lumber Liquidators and Overstock will release earnings before the opening bell. Del Taco will follow after the close. And as we look forward to the week, we'll get the FOMC meeting tomorrow with the factory orders coming as well. And then on Wednesday, the Mortgage Bankers Association mortgage applications. We'll also have the Fed Chair news conference at the end of the meeting of the Federal Reserve. Jobless claims on Friday, Thursday, and then on Friday, existing home sales. So a busy week of things that could move the markets.